For those of you who came late, I would like to show the poster that Riley showed us at the beginning for Voices of Conscience.
Yes, it's here.
That's our poster.
Riley, would you just like to explain to us this poster again, what you're going to use the funds for?
Yeah, that poster was published in the Herald Tribune. It was a full-page coverage. It's signed by 350 people, anybody from Chomsky to von Spanek, from all countries and all, I guess, all kinds of people signed it. We're selling these posters. They're only available in French. It's $2.
On the mezzanine?
Yes, we're on the mezzanine. We have a booth. We have many other literature and petition to sign.
And there are the excellent cards for Mother's Day. Don't forget the mothers of Iraq.
In all fairness, the money that we make, it goes to Iraqi people, charities.
Children, and this is just to remind Mr. Chrétien that we have not forgotten the mothers of Iraq and the children of Iraq. All right, so now we think we're ready for questions. So.
The other soldiers who were with you in Iraq, how do they perceive you, the ones who are coming out and telling about the aftermath?
I think they're very happy that some of us have chosen to come forward. A lot of people... See, 4,200 Canadians were sent to the Persian Gulf War. Out of that, maybe 2,000 of us were actually there when the air war or ground war were going on. So you're only looking at about 2,000 of us. And over 90% of us are out of the system now. But most of us weren't medical. Like, they were infantry. I mean, you know, behind guns, cannons, and tanks or whatever they do. So very few of us were medical, and that's where the Canadian government has the upper hand, is that they keep everybody ignorant. Nothing's documented. If you challenge, there's nothing that's coming forward. So you're minimized and belittled, and you get nowhere. And Canada has over 600 soldiers now that have died since the Persian Gulf War.
Not had the war, after the war.
Since the war. Canadians did not die on the battlefield. We're dying a slow death now that we're home on our own turf. So, as I said, it's doing media and doing radio and doing work that they do that the soldiers that aren't aware of this out there are slowly finding out that they're not crazy, they're sick. But the government keeps on minimizing it. The provinces, OHIP, Quatre, wherever you come from in Canada, you go to a doctor, they have these tests. And we get these tests done, but everything comes back negative because we need these tests. What we have doesn't show up in the normal stuff. We were not in a normal environment. So what we have is abnormal. And until Canada, Chrétien, or our new Minister of Veterans Affairs now, recognizes that something's wrong with us, we're just going to keep on being a burden on the provinces, going around not knowing what's wrong with us, getting more and more depressed, people committing more and more suicides. You know, we should not be giving blood. Organ donation should be banned. Canada has chosen to ignore this. There are many theories. One, Professor Garth Nicholson in the United States, that is convinced that we were sprayed either via scud or through the anthrax, these illnesses. And what's sad about it is that it's communicable. We have our spouses or our wives that are now sick. We have doctors in civilian life that are caring for us that are now ill. Family pets have been dying. this is, yes, more and more, he just, you know, reminded me, we have a friend that was a civilian pilot with Air Canada. That all he did was fly over the area during the Gulf War. He is now sick with Gulf War illnesses. He's dying a slow death as well, and he was civilian, nowhere close. But they were saying that even during the Gulf, birds were falling out of the sky in Florida and elsewhere. So, I mean, the plume of toxicity that we live directly, indirectly, has gone in the environment. So, sorry for rambling on.
Okay, you said that 600 of 2,000 veterans have died in the last 10 years of this disease or group of diseases. As far as you know, how many others are sick?
It's hard to say because Canada doesn't
your best guess.
3 out of 4 people are sick.
Now the Americans had something like 500,000 soldiers.
697,000 American soldiers were.
Are the American soldiers sick or dying in the same proportion?
Yes.
That would be 200,000 died in the last 10 years if it's at the same proportion. That's fairly difficult to conceal.
They have over 65,000 that have died.
65,000.
It depends where you were during the war. Did you receive anthrax or not? The United States, there were almost 700,000, but only 200,000 received anthrax, the nerve pill, and so on.
When you say anthrax, I assume you're not talking about Cipro.
No.
What?
Cipro?
Ciproflax and what?
That's an antibiotic.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, no, anthrax, the disease, anthrax. The blood and airborne diseases, and yeah, it's a chemical weapon. Anthrax. It's very different from Cipro.
No, but so Cipro is the antibiotic that they give to treat or to sometimes prevent anthrax. And we saw that with the round of anthrax in the envelopes in the mail.
We've been brainwashed. No. You cannot look at 9/11 and compare that to the Gulf. I'm sorry. You can't. There's many ways of getting, you know, exposed to anthrax. You can ingest it in here.
I realize all that.
The problem was that you know, you have to give the specific antidote at the right time, the right dosages at the right time. It's got to be very clear, very monitored, which nothing happens on the battlefield, and we didn't have Cipro.
Okay.
I'd just like to maybe answer, come back to your question. You were asking how people are met when they come back here.
No, I was asking.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to know
how the others
were looking upon them. What was their reaction? Because they are saying something.
You're seen as weak, very, very weak. And it doesn't matter whether you're 6'2", 230, you're still weak.
They're perceived as weak by the other soldiers.
I came out not even a month ago from the forces, and the biggest problem is the Canadian forces do not recognize many of the symptoms that these people have, and PTSD is still not recognized. There were mentions that the first casualties since the Korean War was in Afghanistan. I served in former Yugoslavia, and out of 217 people who died in Yugoslavia, 290 committed suicide within a year coming back. And you're seen as weak, but nobody really can explain it. So you'll have other military personnel who, like they said, are really glad that you're coming out because you're offering an explanation. It's not you going nuts. There is something that you can do if you know what the problem is. But then you'll have others who will go with the flow and stick with the system because this is the way you're brainwashed. You know, this is you're doing a job, and someone says, "Well, I think we're doing something wrong." They'll shut you up pretty quick, even if it takes a court martial.
Okay.
I just have to get it up.
Thank you.
Actually, I have something I just want to get out. Speaking just personally here, this has been a major issue for me for some years. I've seen Halliday, Hans Wonsponix, Ken Robinson, yada yada, seems of that sort every time. Hearing you folks speak has come at, bring it a lot closer to home for me than most people could. Somebody who, like myself, has been civilian and has ranted about the evils of imperialism for years and whatnot, you tend to, after a while, start saying that the people who would do this are inhuman animals and so forth. Speaking of soldiers, as someone who's never even thought about considering thinking about joining the forces. But I was having a chance to see you people and hear what you had to say has broken that down a little bit further to make that connection again, and I want to thank you for that personally, and also say that you redeemed yourselves very, very beyond that. You've gone from villains to heroes. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other questions? I arrived a bit late, so you might have talked about this at the beginning, but I'm kind of interested to see objection of conscience and the veterans together, and I'm wondering if you guys are working together on
on some project like today about use the Raven got his own thing, we got our own thing because it's something a little bit different, but we found a way to work together because we were there.
I mean, we've been, I think, on each side trying to make some kind of connection. I think initially for AutoPart, what was important was to find out if veterans who were having these problems felt any sympathy for the population in Iraq. Because, I mean, for us, obviously, we're, you know, opposing war or opposing the effect of sanctions on the population. And if the concern of the veterans had only been about their own health and, well, these people are bad people anyway, so we don't care, then we wouldn't have made any connection, but that wasn't the case at all. And I think it often happens, you know, that consciousness is sometimes a slow process, but sometimes you hit a brick wall and it comes to you pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So the circumstances by which someone becomes aware of, you know, of the behind the scenes of our system are multiple, and we're really happy that there is this possibility of working together. In March 2001, last year, François came to the conference in Université de Montréal, and he wasn't the speaker, he just came to see what was going on, and Father Benjamin has a lot of pictures of Iraqi children dying of all kinds of horrible diseases and also malformations at birth. And he used a number of those photographs on his own website to indicate that the health problems are, you know, similar, etc. So this is how the connection is made. François signed this ad in the International Herald Tribune, and it was the first time, actually, that we were planning something, you know, to participate in an event like this together. I think it's important. I guess everybody knows, but just to make sure, I mean, there's a massive, massive cover-up in terms of depleted uranium. I mean, the evidence existed within the armed forces of the United States, of Great Britain, Canada, I'm not so sure, but anyway. They had internal guidelines about the dangers, and they didn't make the information. In the United States, there's a scientist in the Army called, he's no longer there, I think, but his name is Doug Rocky, and his job was to prepare the guidelines for, you know, safeguarding your own health and handling this and handling that, etc. And he prepared an educational video about the dangers of depleted uranium. This video was never used, and he lost his job, and there were even death threats made to him in the past year. In Canada, when we decided to import Iraqi dates, I mean, we're concerned we don't want to sell a product that has depleted uranium in it. And this was tested in other countries, but we also wanted to have some tests made in Canada. first person that we contacted is Professor Harry Sharma. He's in Ontario University. He tested some veterans in his lab facility. And so we asked him, you know, do you want to test those dates to see if there's any, you know, traces of depleted uranium? And he said he no longer had his lab facilities. And his own, you know, most likely explanation for this was that his lab was closed down because he had made those tests. And he was still willing to have it done through some other friends that he knew that, that had it. And eventually we had these tested in Montreal anyway. But the same kind of cover-up happened massively. There was a doctor called Jurakovic in the United States. He was a doctor from the Army, the American Army, and he started testing veterans. His job was terminated. In Europe last year, there was a conference, and many veterans brought the results of their tests, you know, and some experts, such as Rosalie Bertel and others, she's a Canadian, explained that the tests that they had passed were not the appropriate tests to reveal their condition anyway. So, you know, they get tests with phony tests. They don't know that these tests are phony, and they're told the results are negative. And sometimes when you look at the results, they're not even negative, but they're told the results are negative. And one veteran from Halifax, after his death, his widow had his body tested in the U.S., and it was, you know, all his bone structure was full of depleted uranium. So this is something you know that is important and is being covered up, and it's being covered up in Iraq too. Iraq cannot buy the technology to detect, you know, and to make tests on their own population about what it is they've died from, other than the obvious symptoms, but they can't check the bone structure and check whether there's a presence of depleted uranium in the bodies of, you know, especially people in southern Iraq who are the most exposed to this. This type of material is either banned by sanctions or blocked by the United States, who needs to approve a number of the contracts. There's over $5 billion worth of contracts that are blocked right now. Sometimes they want to know the end users of a product. It was even the case once that they wanted to know who the end users of eggs would be. Like, you know, sort of had to account for every user of an egg that they were importing. Iraq was dependent for 70% on imports for its food in 1990 when they decided to impose a total embargo. So obviously you're, you know, attacking the entire population when you're doing this in this kind of circumstance. So they started rationing food 2 days later all over the country to try and make sure that, you know, people had something to get by. There's massive cover-ups of depleted uranium and massive cover-ups of, you know, the rest of the reasons for the sanctions and why they're preparing the bombs, the bombings now. So I think it's important not just to be ready to go out in the streets, you know, next November or next February or whatever when they bomb, but to try and act now against Canadian policy, which has been consistently against the Iraqi people and, you know, pro-war and pro-destruction.
If I may add, this policy hasn't served anything. I mean, what is the result after 10 years, 11 years of sanctions, the destruction of the economy in the country? Saddam Hussein is just as strong as he was before. Quite to the contrary, he's even stronger. He has more power over his people because now he is the only one who can save them from starvation. He has implemented a food distribution system without which the Iraqis would have starved to death. So what are we really doing in Iraq? I don't know, we are strengthening his regime, we are hurting the people, we are hurting our own veterans. What is the profit? Politicians will tell you, we're just following the United States. They will not tell you exactly that, but they will tell you this is in our interest, it's in the interest of the United States, and it's really up to us to question this reasoning. Is it really in our interest? And I see this happening again with the war in Afghanistan. In fact, this would be my next question. In Afghanistan, they are using depleted uranium, they are using new weapons, and they've never consulted the Canadian people if we really agreed to go to this war and what is going to be the aim of this war. Is it going to offer us protection against terrorism? What is it going to accomplish? The war in Iraq or over Iraq was completely avoidable. Iraq had withdrawn from Kuwait before the beginning of the war. Saddam Hussein was making concessions. We always refused what he made as a concession. We always asked for more. And when I say we, the United States and also Canada, we just wanted, we were itching to go to war. And this is very dangerous. I don't think it is at all justifiable to go to any of those wars in which Canada was engaged. In fact, when I came to Canada 30 years ago, the image that I had of Canada was the blue berets, those who peacekeeping forces. This is what we want our country to be a symbol of peace. But we are becoming more and more aggressive. We are following more and more the policy of the United States. And I think it's up to the Canadian people to say, wait a minute, this is not what we want for our country.
I was just wondering, what do you think we could do now to avoid getting into Iraq? Like, what do you think the average civilian, let's say, could do to try and get them to not go and go back and bombard Iraq again?
Find Saddam first.
I think the most...
That's the first idea.
The most important thing is to do whatever, you know, comes to mind in a way. I mean, like, if you read something, you can write back. Like, many people don't write, they think, you know, they need some kind of special skill. Like, you can write, like, six lines, you know, it's fine. If sometimes we give cards, we give, you know, pre-written letters and we say sign. But if you write 10 lines with your own handwriting, you know, just said, I heard this, it's horrible, I can't stand it, you know, please stop it, you send that. It's more important than signing something that's already...
That's worth 100 cards.
That's already printed. So basically, you know, doing small things. Sometimes if there's discussions on radio or whatever about it, phone, and, you know, be part of those who say, you know, they think it's bad what we're doing, as opposed to those who think they say, oh, Saddam is so bad. Yeah, sure, Saddam is so bad, but it's full of so bad people. You know, like we just pull out the red carpet when it's coming from Indonesia. But when it's coming from Iraq, we just bomb them. So it's the same thing. It's a dictator. But, you know, one gives us all his mining contracts and the other one doesn't want to give us access to his oil. So basically that's the problem. I think it's also important to get active around campaigns. So, for example, periodically we have phone-ins. Okay, we do like phone-in waves from the Maritimes to the West Coast. And we make sure that every 5 minutes there's a phone call to Chrétien's office and to, now it's Graham's office. So basically it starts in the Maritimes, they take a certain time slot, and after this, it just moves and moves, and it's nonstop, let's say, for 10 days. And so it gives them a sense that, oh, there seems to be something organized here, and we're getting a number of callers.